Here, now I gotta get this. I gotta straighten this mess out, Michelle from Tennessee.
Okay.
Davi Waller, her name, sorry, Davi Waller, was the writer on Mad Men. I was confusing her for Larissa Kondracki, who is also a girl or a woman, and she's the director. Okay, and Larissa Kondracki is the one with the resume that I was impressed with. She's directed The Americans, Better Call Saul, The Walking Dead, Halt and Catch Fire, Graceland,
oh, wow.
Rogue, a lot of stuff. And she's a really cool, and another Canadian. But that's where my confusion came in, because I was thinking of this female writer, female director, both from Canada. But yeah, Larissa Kondracki was the director. So, Michelle, this one is Landfall. What did you think of 106 Landfall?
Well, I know that you were talking about how much you liked Joe in 105, and I'm going to tell you that 106 is where I fell in love with Joe. Joe, he really struck a chord with me in this episode. So that was my overall impression of it. And of course, there's so much going on in it. I thought 106 was probably one of the best in season one.
Okay, well, so Michelle, I'm sorry, I've been remiss. This is the West Coast Project podcast for Halt and Catch Fire. Of course, 106 Landfall, I'm Mike and you're Michelle, and we're doing these recaps of season one. And sometimes we do them in a row. You hang up right away and do another one right away. So that's why I kind of dropped the introduction there. But yeah, these two and three and four, all from here to the end of the season, all blend together for me as like just the great stretch of this show.
It really is. And it just unfolds so much more information to us while it's so compelling and engaging to watch. So,
yeah. And by the way, the writer on this one is Zach Whedon. He's done, of course, Halt and Catch Fire, but also Southland and Rubicon and Fringe. So this one, I mean, they're not messing around with lower grade talent here with this show. They've got some pretty cool, talented people running and writing and directing.
And didn't you tell me last night that Gordon and Donna were in what was the movie?
Argo.
Argo, yeah.
Yeah, they played husband and wife in Argo.
The some of the captives, right? Some of the people.
I can't even picture them. I'm gonna go recheck that out. But I read it somewhere, IMDb or somewhere.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it was one of the hostage situation people. One of the couple that was in there. After you said it, because it just kind of hit me. So.
You sure they weren't the Iranian soldiers?
I don't think they were. I don't think so.
All right, it would have taken probably some makeup.
Maybe a little.
All right, so here's the Zoom recap. So the prototype computer is ready. It works. Everybody cheers. Everybody's happy. And I think in my notes, and we'll go into the detail scene by scene, I say this is the last time everybody's happy for a while. But everybody kind of cheers. And Cameron comes up with the idea to change the operating system to make it more user-friendly. And we'll see some of the problems that result from that. Gordon has to tell Cameron that you can't just change things and make this more personal without having some technical difficulties on my end. So the answer is no, we're not changing any technical aspects of the operating system. This is another one where I think they're both right. I think they're both interestingly right. What else happens? So Joe is also a very good manager in this one when he figures out what it needs to do to get a foothold in the marketplace. But he has to balance all these people, like Gordon saying no changes, Cameron saying this is such a good idea, you have to do it, and Joe saying we need a product and we need to get it into the marketplace. Gordon invites Joe over to the house without Donna's knowledge of it for a dinner, and that happens. Gordon's trying to track down a Cabbage Patch doll.
Mm-hmm.
That happens. And then, meanwhile, this is all during a storm, so there's the name Landfall of the Storm. We see some other interaction with Bosworth and Cameron where he tells her to be careful as people want to see people who are smart like you fail. Pretty cool.
Right.
Other cool representations of how the real world works in this.
Yep.
I also like the interaction of Gordon and Donna's kids with Joe in this.
And Joe with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that symbolism of the personalizing inanimate things was very cool. And then Joe just seeing Cameron on his way home at the end, where he kind of says, "I need a port in a storm. Where do you go in a hurricane?"
Well, and we finally kind of see Joe tell some truths, maybe.
Yeah, so this gets even better. I might have liked this one even more. Maybe this is picking up speed here. 105 was really good. I think maybe this one is even more likable, more appealing to me. But here it is. So it's first scene, Michelle. Gordon sees the flower blooming on the circuit board. Is this his illness?
Well, he was asleep. They show him waking up, but I do think that we're seeing the beginnings of his psychosis, of his out of touch with reality kind of thing. And I tried to figure out what the flower could have represented, but I just couldn't figure it out.
I think it was a flower. You think it was a good thing, a thing of beauty, or was it a weed? Was it like a invasion thing?
I think it was an invasion. I think it was something that was overtaking what he was doing, because the little roots of the flower, when they zoomed in on it, were like all intertwined with a circuit board and stuff. So it wasn't anything just like beautiful laying there or something. It was a little sinister and real out of place. It was like this thing of beauty that had entwined, but it was out of place for where it needed to be.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. It was almost dangerously pretty, like it didn't belong there.
Right.
Like it was a seductively pretty thing that shouldn't be there.
Right.
It was
going
to cause harm. All right, well, Joe and Cameron are having sex, so they didn't take long to get back on track that way. And she sees the scars on his chest, I guess surprisingly for the first time, because they've had sex before.
Yeah, or maybe she just decided to ask him then or something. I don't know. I don't know that that's probably... She didn't act like, "Oh, I just saw this," but she did want to ask him the question, which was almost kind of funny, like right in the middle of everything. Anyway.
And the scars are like grooves in his skin. They're not like little scratchy scars. They're pretty serious looking.
Yeah. This isn't the Rick Grimes little tiny facial bandage scars. These are some serious wounds this guy's had.
Well, like, but his skin's been ripped away and not put back together completely even.
Well, but how telling. What a great scene this was. She asked him this, and he certainly isn't prepared for the question, and he just immediately goes into this in-depth lie. He just makes up this story. And Cameron, in whatever way she has, knows it to be a lie and calls him on it after a few minutes.
She knows those McMillan men, because she did the same thing last episode with his father.
She did, yeah. And just there comes a point that the lie doesn't reach her anymore. She can tell. She can tell that it's not, the story doesn't reach her anymore. She can tell it's not true. And so she calls him on it, and he goes, "Oh, okay." And he goes into another story that is a complete fabrication, and she gets mad and leaves. So
yeah, the first story was a kind of a cool, like, I had this cool 64 Chevy Nova and I got in this terrible accident, and then I don't even remember, the second one's an ice road crash or something.
Got a kid's farm, or so, that when he was a kid and on somebody's farm, and he didn't even get that far with that one.
So she just says, "You're bullshit. You're a $1,000 suit with nothing inside."
Yep.
And she calls him this is the first instance of her starting to call him this shadow, this empty husk of a thing with nothing inside. Later on, she calls him an echo.
Well,
you're not real. You're an echo of something else.
Well, she tells him, and it's really true, and I thought it rung so true, that he attracts people, but authenticity is what keeps people around, and he can't, and we see time and again, he can't keep people around.
Right, and his defense is, well, you're free to leave. There's nothing keeping you here. It's kind of a bullshitty, I don't know, it was kind of a passive-aggressive way of saying I don't care. Well, he really did probably care.
Sure.
We'll see at the end that he cared. All right, now Gordon comes home. So where are we in timing, Michelle? Last episode was this failed Japanese meeting, and Gordon's drunk. He's drunk a different time now here, right? This is a different... Because he's drunk again. He comes home drunk with beer and flirty with Donna. And Donna's like, oh, you smell like beer. Get away from me.
Well, she was asleep, too. She had to be up early in the morning. She's a very busy, busy woman. And he comes in the middle of the night and bumbles around, wakes her up, and it's...
Well, so does he come in the middle of the night every night? Because that was like last time. It was the middle of the night. Dinner was over. It had to be late. It had to be like 10, 30, 11, midnight, whatever.
I don't know. Maybe he works late a lot. We see him drinking at work a lot, too. I don't even think we've mentioned that, but they're drinking at work a lot.
Yeah. Anyway, so Donna shuts all that down, tells him, you need to pick up the Cabbage Patch girls, Cabbage Patch dolls for the girls. That's what they want for Christmas.
It was a birthday. But she doesn't even tell him to. She just... asks him if he will. Well, no, she didn't even ask him. He volunteers to do it. And I think he thinks he's going to get lucky if he takes some of the load off of her, but that didn't work. So
we see Joe picking out his clothes again. It's interesting they did this two episodes in a row. Quicker this time, shorter, like picking out his suits. And then he's getting his car washed. Like he's polishing this perfect image himself, his car. And the guy at the – it was a cool way of saying that a storm is coming. Joe getting his car washed and a guy giving him a receipt saying no charge because it's going to rain on your car anyway.
Right. And then we see the billboard. He sees the billboard in the reflection of the car mirror and he sees this guy. And it's like you were talking about polishing his image. He takes off his tie and his coat and does this kind of different look.
Yeah, I thought he was trying to look just like the guy in the billboard.
That's what I mean, yeah.
A different look from his normal look.
Right, right. He's changing his look to be even more stylish or whatever is the style of the moment.
I thought he looked more stylish before he did what the billboard guy looked like, though. He looks pretty sharp with his tie and his business attire. I don't think he needs to change that. I mean, especially he's going into work. He's not going to a nightclub or something.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with you. I think it was just showing his mindset, though, of wanting to always be on the cutting edge of whatever.
So that was the first commercial break. And we come back to Cameron's house. Interestingly, now we got to remember as we're watching this recap of season one, this isn't Mutiny. This is her house where she lives and gets up and goes somewhere else to work. And yet here's Yo-Yo living there.
Yeah.
I mean, they're roommates. So she must just be renting out her house, sharing rent with roommates.
Or maybe she moved in with him.
I think this is her house.
Is it hers?
I think so. Yeah.
I think it turns into it, but I didn't know. Yeah,
I mean, she was there before Yo-Yo. Yo-Yo came just last episode, and this becomes the Mutiny house.
It does.
I think it's her house, and Yo-Yo. She probably's like, "Hey, anybody want to share rent and pile in this house with me?"
Yeah.
But Yo-Yo's modifying the adventure game, and this is the germ of the idea that she gets for this personalizing things. And he hands her a copy of it and says, hey, I did this for you. Then we go to Cardiff, and Joe's giving a speech to the team at Cardiff that the gifted man is a gift to his community, this Henry Ford quote.
Yeah.
Pretty cool concept that if you have a gift, you're obligated to share it with the world. You can't just say, this is my gift, I'll do whatever I want with it. You kind of owe it to this society, to the world.
What do you think?
I think I agree with that.
I think I do too.
If you have a great surgeon's hands, you can't retire. You have to work and help people. If you're a musician, you have to put that art out there. Kind of agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a gift. You didn't do anything to earn this necessarily. This is something that you're born with. And yeah, I think that's a good policy.
You might have done a lot to refine it. I mean, it's practice and work and all that, but
oh, absolutely. In a surgeon's hand, you've obviously done a lot of work to refine, like you said, that skill. But if it's a gift, if it's something that comes easier to you, or if you have brilliance, I think it's very selfish not to share it.
Yeah, I think that's the message. So we get to the, we go back to the computer. They have a prototype now with the screen, still kind of apart, but they have it with this new LCD screen. And the whole team is waiting for it to get turned on, and they want Boz to turn it on.
In place of Joe, and did you see his face?
Joe looked a little disappointed, yeah. Or are you saying Boz looked, Boz looked pleased, surprised, but pleased.
Yeah, but Joe, I mean, Joe was, like, devastated. The look on his face, he's in there in his tie-less way. You know, he's just taken off the jacket and everything, and he's kind of, I don't know, toned it down a little bit, and he's in there, and he's giving this great speech about everything, and then they start going, Boz, 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 because they want Boz to be the one to turn it on, and it just, I don't know, I think it really affected him. It hurt his feelings.
So it goes from the gifted man as a gift to his community to... You got to grab your balls and jump. Boz has his own philosophy and fires it up, and they all cheer and everything's happy. This is where I said this is the last time everybody's happy for a while anyway.
Yeah.
Joe even offers Gordon a handshake. Congratulations. You did it. And Gordon invites Joe over for dinner. So we're going to see this interesting meeting later on with Joe and Donna. Gordon's not even a part of this meeting, really. Joe and Donna and the two kids.
I was surprised Joe took him up on that offer. I don't know why.
I think it was the feel good. Like, everybody's, we've resolved our turbulence and some, you know, happy days ahead.
Yeah.
Cameron gets a request now from Joe for peripheral, or I guess. Joe gives her a request of her, this peripheral drive schedule. It's not, hey, Cameron, how you doing? It's, where's the peripheral drive production schedule, Miss Cameron? It's like very formal. Mm-hmm. It's not flesh and blood, like she says. It's work. It's manager to subordinate.
Well, he even points it out. He says he's your boss.
What'd you think of that?
I don't know how to take him. It's true, but do you think it was some kind of a payback for her delving too deep about the scars?
I think it's Joe's defense mechanism. I'll retreat behind this role of me being the manager. You have to kind of answer me. That's our interaction. That prevents any more intimate or personal communication from happening. I think it's its defense.
Okay. That makes sense.
Because who cares about the peripheral drive code or whatever?
Yeah, it's just like his way of holding her at arm's length, or maybe letting her know I'm holding you at arm's length by the way he was talking to her.
So Cameron goes from that to she starts playing Yo-Yo's modified adventure game. And by the way, she pulls that disc out from under her little dolly that we're going to see later on. I don't know if you caught that, but that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And she sees the personalization that Yo-Yo's put on the game. It asks her her name. It asks if she needs any help moving ahead with the game. It gives her kind of a funny little comment, like, you're in the IBM lobby with a grenade. What do you do? Kind of interesting, personalized, interesting, makes her kind of smile and laugh.
Well, yeah, and this is back when it was just basically DOS, right? I mean, it was like a flashing nothing cursor, and suddenly you get this stuff that comes up, and Cameron, as soon as she sees it, you see the look on her face, and she is giddy. She loves this. This strikes a deep, deep chord with her.
Yeah, she's very affected by it. She literally pauses, blinks, like, okay. Here's the idea. Now it's forming. Okay, it's clarified in my head. She looks at the dolly again. It's like, okay, the personalized dolly. And then she literally says, our computer's going to have personality.
Yes.
And goes to Gordon, and here's the catch to it all, is that means memory. It needs technical backup to do this. It needs space on the memory.
Yeah. Did you notice how much it was? Wasn't it like 375 kilobytes or something?
I think it was 284K of RAM. So what do we have now in our computers? 4 gigs of RAM or 4 megabytes of RAM?
Yeah,
megabytes.
Yeah, no, you have like a terabyte usually on a desktop.
No, not of RAM.
Yeah.
No, Not of RAM, Michelle. That's storage. That's the hard drive. RAM is the random access
Okay,
memory.
never mind. Yeah, you're right. But 10 on a lot of them anyway. On laptops, you have 4.
Yeah, 4 megabytes, 4,000 bytes. He needs 284.
No, 4 gigabytes. Gigabytes now.
All right, hold on a second.
Yeah, I mean, it's true.
I'm literally gonna look.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right, gigabytes. Is that what I said, or did I say megabytes?
You said megabytes.
Okay, so 4 million bytes. So she needs 284,000. Okay, she needs 284 kilobytes.
She needs nothing. It's
Yeah.
like an email size or something, and it's not, but it almost, it's just teeny,
By
teeny.
the way, what are you doing with 4? I have 16 gigabytes in my laptop.
You
It's
have
really
16
fast.
gigabytes of RAM?
Yeah.
I have 10, I think.
You have
You
to have a
said
multiple of
four.
4. Can't only, I guess you could
No, you
put
don't
a.
have to have four.
Yeah, usually you do.
No,
When you
there's
pull the
two.
starter cord on your computer, Michelle, and the steam comes out,
I'm pretty sure it's 10. Don't make fun of me.
it's usually a multiple of 4. It can probably be a 2, but it's usually a multiple of 4. 4, 8, 12, 16.
No, it can be 2, 4.
All right. She has 284K, though. She needs more, 284K. But remember, the game she's playing is on a 5.25-inch floppy disk.
Right.
So those are the days. So Gordon's like, no, you're crazy. It's done. And Cameron says it has no soul. And this is where I started thinking they're both right. He's right. You can't just come up at the last minute and change the technical specs and expect engineering to change all that.
Yeah, but no. I completely disagree with you here. I thought if you have somebody who's this genius, and I know that it would be more work or whatever, but if you have somebody that's this genius and she is this excited over something, you don't see Cameron do this over anything. And she can't even get the words out. She's tripping over her words trying to tell him about it because it's that big of a deal. And he not only does he shoot her down, but he shoots her down and he's ugly and he's self-righteous and condescending, and he does it in a way to make the people around him laugh.
Well, this is the problem that all geniuses have, is they're first perceived as like insane. You can't make internet go through the air and get to your computer. You gotta have a cable, you
Right.
fucking idiot. She's just a computer genius, and he's right though. They're ready to get ready to put this into production. You can't at the last minute change things.
They are, and I
They're
do
both right.
understand.
They're both right.
But I don't like the way he handled it, I guess. I mean, I definitely see that he's right, and they've done something that's never been done, and they've got the product out, and everything's going good. But if you see somebody like that with that kind of enthusiasm over something, and you see what they've already turned out that they weren't even that enthusiastic over, I am jumping on that train.
All right, Michelle, how long have you had that hover car in your backyard on blocks? It won't
Well,
fly. You know you want it to fly.
yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. I believe in her as far as what she's doing with this stuff, and I want Gordon to believe in her.
Well, this is where we this oh, this is the difference now between Gordon and Joe, and this is again where this show is just genius because Joe does listen to her. He listens to her. It sinks in. It registers. Then he asks about the additional hardware requirements for it, but she still can't sell it. She's still stuck at this level of, well, fuck you. If you don't do it, you're wrong, and gets angry. She doesn't have the expertise to the skills to sell the idea.
No, she's almost like Gordon in but completely different. But she's almost like him in that she has no social skills or managerial or convincing skills for stuff like that either.
Right. So she tells the Dolly story, which is a compelling story, but still, Gordon's still right in his point, and she's still right. It's a genius thing. It's just the timing of it all. But this is where Joe is the best manager out of all these people, because he listens to her. He brings up the problem again about the hardware, and then he says, look, we got to go to Comdex, we got to get Sears or some big customer, we get a foothold, and then we'll add features, then we'll add the genius stuff. And then she just storms out, like, well, fuck you, you don't get it. Nah, she doesn't get it. Like,
right.
You're right, she's the other side of Gordon's coin. He's the technical limited person, and she's the personality limited person. Even though she's trying to present this great idea of how the personality, the computer should have a personality. I don't know. It was just brilliant. There's three sides to it. Joe's in the middle, and he's got a grasp on it. I just think Joe was the totally correct one in this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with how Joe handled it the whole way through this episode. I just hate how Gordon handled it. That's all. Even though they both said the same thing for the majority of the episode, I just didn't like the way Gordon handled it at all.
Well, did you like the way Cameron handled it?
No, not at all. But Joe, I did.
Yeah.
Joe was perfect in this. Joe was perfect in this whole episode. I loved Joe in this episode.
All right, so here's where Hunt gets a little bit more complicated in this episode. He and Donna are looking over at Texas Instruments, looking over the reports, and he asks her a weird question. He says, does Gordon understand you? Because something about the report was written in a really in-depth way that was probably a little difficult to understand. And so Hunt says, well, does Gordon understand you? This is a little hard for me to understand. But it was overly personal.
I agree.
It was like, does he understand you as a woman and your need? Mm-hmm. It was too personal.
Yep.
And then this is where Hunt again gets more complicated, because where is he starting to steal this idea? She solves this real estate of where do you put the chips and the hardware on the boards by putting them on both sides of the boards, and Hunt, something goes over his head, a light bulb somewhere, that is this something I could do and maybe capitalize on? I mean, his theft of this concept has to start somewhere, and I think it might be here. And
did he steal this concept? Am I forgetting?
Yeah, he put the booth at the Comdex show with the competitive computer.
Oh yeah! Oh my gosh!
This is why I keep asking you. This is why I keep asking you. Where did Hunt begin to steal their idea?
Okay. Wow.
Anyway, so
yeah.
This
it was there then.
They ratcheted up a little by little. I mean, because she, even the call last episode about the vodka and the grandma's pie crust, I mean, it's he's sniffing around somehow, some way, and he's not that he shuts her down for sex at the hotel room, so he's sniffing around for something more than just sex, and I think it's to steal their ideas. I don't know. I mean, he's in another computer company, which is suspect. I don't know. It's mysterious. It's very interesting, but it's mysterious.
It is, and it's almost like it's a conflict of interest, even where Donna's working and her going in and helping Cardiff and then being it. Not, I don't know how that would be, but
maybe. But I mean, that has to happen a lot. You're in a computer technology town like that, and you're working similar industry. That's how people meet. They meet at work, and they meet
right.
at. Anyway, that's why I kept asking
vodka,
you.
Yeah, sorry, I'm completely spaced on that. Vodka in pie crust is a thing.
Oh, I'm glad we got that cleared up.
Well, that's important.
So this is where Hunt invites her on the business trip, and she thinks, well, great, this is really interesting. And I think she's thinking, like, maybe this is a romantic way to Hunt. I think she's interested in Hunt a little dangerously here. Do you agree with that?
I think she's interested in some kind of life outside of the misery that they show with her and Gordon.
Yeah,
all the
so
time.
She's interested so, sure. in him potentially romantically, which is
maybe, yeah.
outside of the rules. So Joe tells Gordon it's got to be built the way Joe decides, which, again, I like this part about Joe, too. He's authoritative and he takes control. You can't let all these crew of the ship wander around bumping into each other. He takes direction.
Yeah, particularly not this ship.
Yeah. So Gordon laments about this to Donna. He bitches to Donna a lot about his personal weaknesses, which has to drive her crazy.
Yeah.
And then she just asks about the Cabbage Patch doll. And here we're outside the window till we see the storm starting to rain harder and get darker and looks more ominous.
And this is where Joe lies.
Huh?
He lies. He says he's got it.
Gordon lies.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Gordon lies. I do that all the time. I do that all the time between the two of them. Yeah, Gordon lies.
And then he frantically has to cover that. So he also tells Donna here that he's invited Joe to dinner tomorrow, which brings a lot of these competing people to an important conflict, I think, or resolution maybe. So now, Michelle, I got confused with the time here. They show the clock, 7:18. Was it 7:18 a.m. or p.m.? Because Cameron's working. She's struggling with her new idea. And then a boyfriend walks in the room and cracks a beer. She's got some biker, rough-and-tumble-looking boyfriend.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually noticed that, too. It's got to almost be p.m., right?
I could see a guy like that cracking a beer at 7:18 a.m. He's got nothing to do, right? He's sitting around all day.
It might be a.m. because right after that, they show the other scene with Joe getting up again. You know,
yeah, and she goes into work.
Yeah, you're right. I think you might be right. It may be a.m.
But before that happens, they show this is the she's stuck, resolve it with sex theory.
Yeah.
Because he's like passed out on the bed after having sex with her, and she's typing away like a madman on the computer.
Yep.
Whereas
yep.
before, she had a blank screen on the computer. So
yep.
I don't know why they wanted to say this about Cameron or present this part of her, but they make it pretty. This is the resolution of that, or the definition of that. They define it pretty clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it is morning. Whatever happens next is morning. Joe opens his shutters, and it's raining, and it's the landfall. So I guess it could have been the night. Sex, Cameron types away all night, and then the morning happens, but it's I don't know, it's unclear. 7:18 a.m. or p.m. Yo-Yo asks Cameron if she needs a ride to go into work, and she knows she's on a roll, so she either typed all night or she just had sex that morning and she's still on a roll.
If she did, that guy went to sleep pretty quick, because
well,
he was out.
He's had a beer, too.
Well, okay, yeah. I don't know.
So back at Cardiff, now Gordon goes up to Lev and asks him for the drivers, the code he's supposed to be running for the drivers, but nope, he's working on the OS expansion, the operating system, per Cameron's instructions. And this really angers Gordon. And then to keep more on his troubled mind, Debbie reminds him he needs a Cabbage Patch doll. Gordon rushes right out and gets gypped for a Cabbage Patch doll, further verifying his stupidity, right? He buys a box wrapped in wrapping paper with a brick inside.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
And the guy zooms away in his car, screeching the wheels. Michelle, did you buy Cabbage Patch dolls in 1983 or 4 or whenever this was?
I didn't. I missed the Cabbage Patch doll for my own age wanting one, and I missed it for having daughters, so no.
Oh my God, you tortured soul.
I know.
But now if you had a Cabbage Patch doll, you'd be like, eh, that was a fad.
Definitely.
That's the thing about fads. They're very time sensitive. They have shelf lives. Okay, so Cameron gets the coders together and gives them instructions for the operating system. And they kind of taunt her with sleeping with Joe. One of them does anyway. Are you sleeping with Joe? Are you sleeping with the boss? This gets her really angry, and she kind of resolves it in an interesting way pretty quickly.
Well, yeah, because somebody had brought that up earlier. Who was it who said that earlier? They made some comment about, oh, it was Gordon in the group of people. He said she gets her way by sleeping with
the boss.
Yeah, was it Gordon? Yeah, that's what he said to Lev. And Yo-Yo, right?
It could have been, yeah, in that scene we just talked about.
Yeah, it could
have been.
And that's what made her so mad, was they ask her, and so she's really frustrated that Gordon had said that, I think.
Well, they don't say it like, you know, Cameron, we're really concerned. Are you getting involved with Joe? They're like, make a joke of it, and they all laugh. So it's like a taunt.
Sure.
So Gordon now has to replace the brick with another Cabbage Patch opportunity, and frantically calling people and having Debbie call people. And he finds a way to get one somewhere and says, hold it, I'll be right there. And on his way storming out the door to get to the car, Cameron intercepts him and kisses him in front of everyone. It says, you were incredible last night. Pretty good revenge by Cameron there.
Yeah, but that's dangerous, though. And I think in this upcoming scene, I think that's what Boz is halfway talking to her about, don't you?
Yeah, well, that's Cameron's MO, danger. I'll bring a frickin' can of spray paint and tag your house if you make me mad.
Right.
I'll invite strangers off the street to a motel room to party with drugs and whatever. She's reckless.
Good point.
So Gordon is dweebish. He doesn't know what even to do there. I mean, they're hammering Gordon down into the ground, these writers. He's beaten so low at this point that and they keep compounding him lower. He's unlikable to a certain point. You think you can't get any lower, and then they pound him even lower. But this is where it gets interesting, because Joe needs to now go to the Clark's house for dinner. And as soon as he gets there, these two little sweet little girls mob him. And I don't know if it's Lee Pace or the writers writing Joe McMillan, but he charms these little girls just like he charms the people in real life. He's a master communicator with people, right?
Which makes him so much more likable to me.
Yeah. Didn't he sell these little girls on this flashlight being a protector?
Yeah,
like he
absolutely.
Sold a computer, like he sold advertising, like he sold everything.
He instills a level of confidence in anything he's selling, any idea or any product or anything. The confidence that he can instill about the product is incredible.
Yeah,
he
finds a pain and he sells you the medicine for it.
He does.
For these little girls, they're afraid of the storm, so he finds that and then he finds a solution for them. It's just a charming little scene. It's such a cool scene. I mean, first of all, they're six. We find out they're 6 years old, or one of them's the oldest one's six, and he's 35. Or maybe the youngest one's six. I don't think it matters, but they're, a couple of years apart.
Right.
And he builds a fort for them to hide in and protect from the storm. And then he exits, by the way, immediately and sits down like, okay, that's enough of that shit. You can tell he doesn't really want to do it. He's just super good at it.
Right.
He doesn't want to play in the fort with them. He just wants to get him in the fort, and then he ducks out the back. And I think Donna admired this activity with the girls. I think she really admired watching Joe work and play with her daughters.
Of course. Of course. I mean, as any mother would. Any mother would appreciate somebody putting that kind of special attention to these little girls who she kind of apologized for being so rambunctious and overly eager with them or whatever, and he just took it in stride and then charmed the pants off of them. And I mean, what a great scene to have.
It was interesting at the very beginning when the one little girl sat on his shoe, and he's like, that's a $300 Italian shoe you're sitting on. Donna kind of saw that and let them run a little bit more wild than I think a mom would have. Like, okay, I'm gonna let Joe suffer a little bit. I think she let them out of their cage a little bit with him, to jab him a little bit.
Do you think?
Maybe,
but remember she was talking about she wanted to make this okay for Gordon too. She wanted to, after Gordon's come home and talked to her about what Cameron wants to do, she wants to make sure Joe knows that Gordon's done a great job. And so I think she's kind of trying to schmooze Gordon a little bit. Schmooze Joe a little bit as well.
Right. She's using this opportunity to grill him. She grills Joe about the operating system. And then she does really support Gordon. She's a pretty awesome woman. I mean, any guy that can find a woman like this is pretty lucky.
Yeah.
She says Gordon's a genius, you know, and you're talking about the ingenuity of Cameron's great software and the communication and the personalization of it. Well, Gordon's a genius, and that ingenuity is already in that hardware. Look at it.
Wow.
It's artwork. It's art as it sits like it is. Nobody even started to think of it that way. I didn't think of it that way until she said it. that way. She's right. Gordon, with her help of double-siding the boards, has created this beautiful artwork that is a small, powerful, inexpensive, fast computer.
I think it's like you brought up before, she views things that way, like music and like art, because of her piano playing and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So Gordon's out there looking for the Cabbage Patch. The storm's getting really bad now, and he's driving and looking and finds the store, but it's closed because of the storm. So he just breaks the window. It's like Gordon, again, can't figure the legit way to get something done, so he does the stupid, obtuse thing, and it just breaks the window and gets the doll.
Yeah, well, that was horrible.
And then, I mean, this scene cuts back and forth a few times from the store and the power line and all that, but he sees a fallen power line that's essentially killed somebody. Do you think that was real? Do you think that was a real person?
I am so sorry. Julia, it was her 21st birthday this week, and so she's going out tonight. She's got a hotel room and going out with a bunch of friends and everything, and I thought we'd be probably done before now, and so she was leaving, and I wanted to talk to her for a little bit before she left. So
she didn't get invited to that hotel room by a coder from who just got their first paycheck, did she?
I didn't ask, but anyway, she's going out for her first grown-up go-out, so...
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're talking about the power line, and I asked you if you thought the guy zapped by the power line was real. And the reason I asked you that, Michelle, is because Gordon has seen death multiple times now. He's seen the bird, he's seen the horse, and now he sees this person. And I guess the others were pretty clearly real, but they made this look kind of ephemeral, like it's really real. I know he thinks it's real, but is it a dream? Is it his illness doing it? Or was it just really real? He really saw it?
I didn't question that he saw it. He breaks the window and he gets those Cabbage Patch Kids out of the window. And at about that same moment, there's this like loud clap of thunder and lightning, the kind that just strikes almost simultaneously and makes you know that it's really, really close. And he walks around the corner and he sees that, But now that you bring it up, there was nobody else on the road. And of course, I mean, you got a bad storm, so that I don't know how unbelievable that is. But there was nobody else on the road. And he just walks away. What about his reaction to that? Because that's what I was going to ask you, even more so than was it real, which I didn't even wonder. I wondered about him walking away from this.
Well, that's what I think makes it more... difficult to understand because he didn't call an emergency vehicle to help the person who got zapped, and
no.
He was afraid of maybe getting caught for breaking the window. He just wanted to get home with his little prize and go back to Donna and say, here, be impressed with what I've done.
Right.
I mean, doesn't he later somehow dream that it's him hit by that wire in a nightmare?
The beginning of the next episode. That's actually what he did. He has a dream and it's him laying there. Yeah.
Because he doesn't talk about it. He doesn't tell Donna. We don't get to see much of them after because the show kind of runs out here. But I don't know. They told her, "Wow, you wouldn't believe what I just saw. I got the dolls, but on the way I saw this terrible accident."
No, he doesn't even bring it up, as far as I know, and I didn't understand why he wouldn't bring it up.
Well, the girls are right there, and I don't know. But it was just a weird scene. It's like
but he tells her everything else. I mean, good grief. It's not like he doesn't whine. That's ugly. But he does. He kind of whines about everything that's going on, but he won't tell her something as horrific as seeing that.
Well, maybe not in front of the girls.
You might be right. Yeah.
So we go back to Boz in Cardiff. Boz invites Cameron to have a drink with him, and he asks her about the dust up in the bullpen.
Right.
And Cameron shares her vision about computers with him, and that she wants computers to be for people that know nothing about computers. Cameron sees the future, Michelle. There are people now that walk into a Best Buy and buy a computer, and they have no idea what a computer is on the inside. They just know it gets them email and it gets them maybe a Netflix movie. She was right back in, 32 years ago?
Yeah.
Computers for people that know nothing about technology inside the computer.
Yeah, she says that Gordon wants to build a computer for people who love computers, but she wants to build a computer for people who never thought they'd even want a computer. And she goes into how she wants them to fall in love. And it's brilliant. And you're right, she's a visionary.
Yeah, so Boz, and this is also very visionary storytelling by the Christophers, the two writers. So then Boz says, well, when did you fall in love? And she says, in computer club, I had no friends in junior high, and I made friendships via the computer club. They were like the only people that would have me. So she tells her story, and it was like the personalization, the social connection that she was able to make through technology. And this is where Boz gives her the warning, be careful, because people, you're the future. There's nothing scarier than the future, and right. People are going to want you to fail. Because they're afraid of you. They're afraid of what you represent as the future.
Right.
Pretty cool. Pretty philosophically cool, I think.
Yeah, and really on point for somebody like Boz, I think.
Yeah, he's a old soul too. He knows what makes people tick, I think. He may not be the most effective communicator like Joe, but he's got a good sense for people. Now we see interesting interaction now between Donna and Joe, which are somewhat hated enemies, right? Donna and Joe still stuck waiting for Gordon to come home. And she says to Joe, when I was a kid, my dad took me out in storms. Interesting thought that she's revealing her background and her father now. We've seen a lot of parental and grandparental connections in these last few episodes. And so the girls, another bolt of lightning and thunder hits, and the girls are a little bit more afraid. And he shows her hurricane zappers that protect people from storms, and those are flashlights. And they personalize them with names almost immediately, and this makes Joe realize, you gave them names? You gave this thing that's just a thing a name.
Right, this inanimate object, you gave a name, and the girl said that it's their friend. And you can really see the light bulb go off in Joe at this point, that he connects with kind of what Cameron was saying.
Yeah, do you remember that I caught one of the names, Anastasia, but I couldn't catch the other. Shecky or something?
Yeah, I got it somewhere.
Anyway, it was very interesting that they closed the circle with Cameron and Joe and us as the audience with these little girls giving these flashlights names, which is exactly what kids do, right? They give little things names.
Sure.
Inanimate things names.
Well, yeah, and they take things and make them, you know how kids feel like about their stuffed animals and stuff like that, which is kind of what Cameron said a couple of times through the whole episode anyway.
So why do you think Joe went outside with the flashlights?
I think it showed that he would do whatever he had to do to sell his idea. The girls were like, kind of like, I don't think they're going to work in here. And Joe goes out into this torrential rain and holds up these flashlights and does this whole big thing with them. That's how far he would go. The torrential rain, and there's like limbs blowing past him, and I wasn't sure if it actually blew him down or if he was just putting on a show for the girls, but
yeah, this is a hurricane. I think it's meant to show that storm was strong enough to blow him around. But he is putting on a show too. I mean, not that it's that important, but
it's important to them.
It mimics his theatrics that he goes through in his other scams and schemes, like the reporter and all that. He's putting on kabuki theater. No, he's putting on a show for the people that are most interested in it.
And I mean, and going that far to do it, he comes in and he's just drenched. But what did you think about the kind of family setting that he ended up with in there with Donna and the girls, and she's rubbing his hair and
drawing? I don't know. They almost made it from the outset of Joe getting there with Gordon not there, like, Donna's going to be switched over to think Joe's dreamy. He's really good with my daughters. The daughters love him. Donna's impressed with him now. Like, is Joe going to be, like, romantically connected to Donna? Gordon's such a freaking loser at this point. It's like, why not? You know, why not start to believe that?
Yeah.
But Gordon arrives and Joe leaves right away, so they pretty clearly make that clear that that's not what he what it is. I don't know, that cleared it up for me pretty quickly.
Yeah, and yeah, I didn't really think that, but I think it kind of went to show that Donna is just kind of desperate for this kind of interact. I don't know if she's desperate, but it was just another contrast of her interaction with a quote unquote normal person versus her interaction with Gordon, which is so
Stilted,
tainted.
yeah.
Yes. Anastasia and Sharky is what they called them.
Oh, Sharky, okay. Are those two names connected in something?
Not that I know of, no.
So Joe goes directly to Cameron's house too, which also further clarifies that he's realized I need people. I need to connect with people like this. He leaves this little bucolic Norman Re Rockwell. Ooh, that's a good Freudian slip, Norman Rockwell. But Norman Rockwell family of like safe in a storm, and he's not safe in a storm. And so he says to Cameron, if you got stuck in a hurricane, do you have anybody you'd call? Because I don't. And we're pretty telling. Now he's starting, like you said a minute ago, he's starting to finally be honest with her.
Yeah, I think he is. I mean, how do you know when somebody lies about everything? But he goes into the story about what actually happened to him. She doesn't even ask him again. He just tells her.
Well, because it would be horrible story writing if it was just, oh, you're lying again. Okay.
Right.
It would just, I mean, these are people reaching transitions in their lives. Their lights are coming on for them.
Right.
And so he asks her what she's been working on, and she shows him the yo-yo style of writing onto a program and making it personal. It only knows first names, though. He tries to put his full name in it, doesn't get it. And so they kind of show that this is hard. This isn't just something, oh yeah, this is a good idea, I'll just do it. It's like it takes some thought, right? Cameron struggled with it before she had sex with the other guy, and he kind of helped her break through. It's not easy to just write this code, and so she's worked really hard on it, and it's only able to get the first name, not quite the whole name. That's probably something later that we need to do. And now we've got where they read fingerprints and irises and all that, but pretty substantial jump, I think, that Cameron makes with this technology and inserts her personality into this software.
Oh, sure. And did you see Joe's face? Because he does the same face almost that Cameron did when she first did it. He loves it, and he even tells her this is pretty good.
Yeah, and then he does tell her the story. He went up to the roof with his mom. She's like as a drug addict. And he fell off the roof 3 stories and hurt himself and had to spend 2 years in the hospital.
And then Cameron just loves all over him and kind of.
Yeah, this was the whole focus of this whole series. Think if this series doesn't get renewed and this is where it's kind of left forever with these 2 seasons, this is the gist of this whole series, Michelle. This scene. It's like Joe and Cameron understanding how to communicate. And it's all about personality and need, what we need as people, and the desire of people. And how products work and computer, like it's all wrapped up into the scene with the storm. How products work, how computers, people that don't even know what a computer is will want one someday. I mean, this is the gist of this whole show in like this last 10 minutes of this episode.
Yep.
It was really, really cool.
It was great. This was my favorite episode, I think, for the whole season.
Well, I think it still continues to get better. I don't know why, but I mean, I can't remember the specifics, but there's 3 more, 7, 8, well, 4 more, I guess, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Next time is 7 Giant, which is what they end up naming the computer, and we'll talk about that. But they end up on their way to having this whole project almost die off, and they have to figure out how to keep it alive for the show. And then we see Hunt competing with them and stealing their idea and almost getting all the glory, and we'll
Right.
see what happens, but. Yeah, so that was it for Landfall 106. Next time's 107. Michelle, how do people reach you before 107 if they have questions?
On Twitter, I'm at Michelle from TN.
And I'm at Scathing Tweets, and westcoastproject.com is our website, and you can leave email there, or you can find the episode feeds and just post on Facebook. All right, Michelle, you got any last thoughts for Landfall?
I don't, but I loved it.
All right, see you next week on Giant.
Okay.